Keeping the lights on in the Nutmeg State. Connecticut's Public Utilities Regulatory Authority Chairman Marissa Gillette chats with Lisa Wexler now on WICC 600.
Marissa Gillette, the chair of Pura. Congratulations and happy birthday and many more. A little birdie, your mother, told me it was your birthday.
Oh, no. That is accurate.
Happy birthday and many, many more. What are you doing on this birthday of yours, Marissa Gillette?
Oh, man. Well, one of my five-year-old twins is homesick today with me, so I think we're going to have to delay birthday celebrations, but isn't that always the life of a mom, right?
Totally. It's like, me? What happened to me? It's not about me anymore. That's right. Well, are you feeling all right, at least? Are you feeling healthy? Are you good, or have you gotten what your five-year-old already has?
You know, I think I've had everything under the sun between the two of them, so I am feeling just fine, but thank you for asking.
All right, so you're a mommy, you're a young mommy, you're a mommy of young ones, and you're balancing your very serious, important work as chair of Pura, and it's your birthday. Well, welcome back to the show, Marissa Gillette. 203-333-9422 is our telephone number if you want to call and get the scoop yourself from the person who runs it all. 203-333-9422. Let me just begin with this. Just can you tell us a little bit about the electric subsidy for people who want to be able to have an electric charging station at their own house? Is this a doable thing, or is this only for people that already own Teslas? What's this about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we launched this program January 1st of this year, and this program is targeted at what are called light-duty electric vehicles. So those are passenger vehicles. They could be vehicles that municipalities have in their fleets. And we've designed a program that will help offset the cost of installing those charging infrastructure. And for a homeowner, a residential customer, they can get up to $500 to offset the cost of the charging infrastructure, as well as $500 to put towards the wiring if you need to upgrade your panel. So those two incentives combined will offset the cost, largely offset the cost of installing the charging infrastructure. The state also offers incentives to offset the cost of the vehicle itself, and those are administered by our sister agency, DEEP. So the program is designed to make sure that this is not out of reach for middle-class customers. We also have targeted deployment of this infrastructure in disadvantaged communities, and we're building out the program to what is called medium to heavy duty, so we can incentivize charging infrastructure for school buses, for the Connecticut DOT's buses, and we're also looking to create a comparable program for what's called microtransit, which is like e-scooters or
really?
E-bikes.
So, e-scooters, huh?
Okay. Have you been on one? They're actually really fun.
No, I've been on e-bikes a lot. I love them. Love them.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't been on e-scooters. I'm probably the nudnik who's going to, fall and hurt herself. Sounds like me. It does. It sounds like me. Marissa, I have a question for you. Is this subsidy designed to help people put a plug in their own garage? Is that what we're talking about?
It is. It's a little more than that. You can charge your electric vehicle by just plugging it into a normal outlet. But this program is designed for what are called level two chargers or smart charger. And it doesn't take up a ton of space in your garage. But the reason that Pura is playing in the space, if you will, is because electric vehicles could be really disruptive to the grid. They could cause the need for a lot of costly upgrades. So if we incentivize the deployment of what are called smart chargers, which are capable of sending price signals to the customer about when to charge and when not to charge, we can actually hope to not only avoid those upgrades that the grid would require otherwise, but we can actually turn the electric vehicle itself into something that's not only beneficial to the individual customer, but also to the grid at large, because you can, you know, reverse the flow of that energy and either charge your home, or if we're talking about, you know, fleets that municipalities might put together, you might be able to send power back to like a microgrid in the event of emergencies.
So in other words, the smart charger is going to say to you, plug it in at midnight or 11 o'clock at night before you go to bed, because that's when we have the least amount of pull. And this way, when you get up in the morning at 7 o'clock, your car is fully charged.
Exactly. You can plug it in when you get home from work at 5 or whenever, and the charger will react to a pricing signal coming from the grid in just the way that you described. So you plug it in and you forget it, and when you wake up in the morning, it doesn't matter to you whether it charged at 2 in the morning or at 5 when you got home.
So who do you call to get one of these smart charging stations in your house?
So the program is being administered by Eversource and UI. So if you are a customer of either of those electric utilities, you can call them. They're also hosting webinars for different types of customer audiences. So there's actually one this evening if you're a residential customer and you're interested. There are also webinars coming up if you're like an electrical contractor who might be working to install these, if you're a municipality interested. So if you're interested in tuning into one of those webinars, the information is pinned to our social media accounts. So if you go to Twitter and look for CT_PURA, you can access all the information about where to tune into these webinars.
We're chatting with Marissa Gillette, the chairwoman of PURA, 203-333-9422, our Public Utility Regulatory Authority. And we've just been discussing the fact that PURA is and the state of Connecticut are incentivizing you with a $1,000 total subsidy of getting a Smart 2 electric charging station in your house or in your business because it helps the grid. So I want to talk a little bit about Eversource and its imposition of policy here. I read that in 2015, they actively spent tens of thousands of dollars to lobby against more solar in the state, which was astonishing to me, of such an obvious conflict of interest that they would be allowed to throw their dollars at this as a public utility regulated authority. What are the limits, if any, on them being allowed to use our utility dollars to lobby?
So if it were up to me, the limit would be zero. They could spend $0 of recoverable money.
$0,
I think they should be. You know, we do have to recognize that these utilities have unregulated arms, right? So Eversource has a parent company, and if they want to spend shareholder dollars on lobbying, then so be it. But there's actually a piece of legislation that the E&T committee released today that has a provision in there that would prohibit recovery of trade association dues, lobbying expenses, things of that nature. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that legislation winds its way through.
What's the E&T committee? What's that?
Oh, sorry, I'm getting in the habit of using acronyms. The E&T committee is the Energy and Technology Committee.
Ah.
It's the legislative committee that has cognizance or jurisdiction over utilities. So anything that, you know, PURA or DEEP or the Green Bank, anything related to energy, the bill has to run through that committee.
I see. We're chatting with Marissa Gillette, 203-333-9422. We'll be right with you if you're holding right now. We'll be right with you. Andrew is fielding the calls, 203-333-9422. I would like to know, Marissa, what was your reaction to finding out that Eversource in Q4, I think, or no, it was the entire year of 2021, had a record-setting profit year at the same time that you had your wrist slapped for trying to have them adhere to the original penalty for what they did with respect to, you know, reactions to storms and other things? What did you feel like when you heard that they had a record-setting profit year?
You know, I think you've already kind of summarized what my feelings were. I had to take a step back. It's not that I begrudge any of these companies making a profit. They're private companies, and they're designed to work in their shareholders' best interest. And I think that we all just need to be eyes wide open about that fact. And I think folks aren't always that way because they think, well, this is a public utility operating a public good. Naturally, they should be operating in ratepayers' best interest. And I think part of my mission over the past couple of years, and it will continue, is just opening folks' eyes to the fact that these are private companies and they have a right, they have a legal right to make a profit. And so the question for us should be less about, like, is it okay that they're making a profit, and more about, are we scrutinizing everything that is being recovered through rates? Because, you know, they have unregulated business like offshore wind and things of that nature. If that is creating a profit that, you know, is allowing them to pay their CEO tens of millions of dollars, like, fine, have at it. But we should be making sure that to the extent any of that money is recovered through rates of Connecticut ratepayers, that we're getting a bang for our buck. And I'm just not sure that that has historically been the case.
Well, and the other part, going back to the lobbying, to me, it's outrageous as a what I call a private monopoly on electric, that they would even have a voice to speak on solar and other alternative sources of power. It's just it's astonishing to me.
It is. But, you know, interestingly, Connecticut has a part-time legislature, and lobbyists, I mean, I've seen it firsthand, especially in the short time before COVID hit that I was here. Lobbyists are playing an outsized influence, especially in the energy industry where the topics are complicated. You know, when I talk to people, their eyes glaze over. So that's why I'm always so grateful for the conversations we have each month, because I'm hoping that we're making it a little clearer to folks. But
all right,
these legislators, I feel for them.
All right, then let's go to that, because we got a bunch of people. Let's go to Ralph first. Ralph, your question for Marissa? No, not for Marissa? Okay, Ralph. Well, do we have Ralph? Ralph just called to chat. Okay, Ralph, if you want to chat with Marissa, that's what we're doing right now. I have another question for you from Gary from Greenwich. Ready? Currently, I can choose my electric supplier, but not my transmission supplier, Eversource. Mm-hmm. As a result, I pay more for transmission than I do for generation. The power lines have been in existence for decades and therefore should have been paid for over and over. Can't we change the regulations to invite competition from other transmission companies, or at least regulate the transmission costs? That's the question.
Great question. So let me take a step back and make sure that we're talking about the same thing, because there's transmission and then there's distribution. And transmission are those big towers that you see. You can think of them as the highway of the electric system. So they're transmitting power across states and at high voltages. And those lines are regulated, but they're regulated by the federal equivalent of PURA. So it's called FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So you are seeing an increasing percentage of your bill going towards transmission. You know, last I looked, it could be 15 to 20% of your bill. And you'll see it as a line item on your bill. It will say something like transmission, sometimes TAC, the Transmission Adjustment Clause. So that is regulated, but it's regulated by the federal component. And there is some degree of competition there. Unfortunately, in the Northeast, Eversource and Avangrid, the parent company of UI, are also in the transmission business. So the question about having adequate competition in the transmission business is something that my counterpart, Commissioner Dykes at DEEP, is heavily invested in. At the distribution level, those are the wires and poles outside of your window that PURA does directly regulate.
Okay, and that's what the listener just said. Sorry, I meant transmission. Okay, yeah, keep going. Yeah. Yep, okay, yeah.
Yep, sorry.
I mean, I meant distribution. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Listener's absolutely correct. So the electric industry is fairly capital intensive, and those poles and wires, they're having to be upgraded fairly regularly, especially in light of increasing number of storms.
Okay.
And that's what you and I have talked about over the past couple of months, is should we just be throwing up a new pole and wire every time a storm comes through, or should we be looking at innovative solutions like strategic undergrounding and what are called non-wires alternatives? And that does inject some competition into it. So PURA is actively investigating I can give the docket number at 171203RE07.
Oh my God!
And if you ever want to, get in touch with me or my staff, we can point you into the docket where we're looking into that. So, great question. We're looking at it.
So you're looking into it, but right now there really isn't much competition for it. But there's a reason why it's expensive, because it does have to be redone a lot. Is that what you're saying?
That's absolutely correct. And I'd say there's not a lot of competition in the distribution business anywhere in the country.
Right.
And it's because it's so historically expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. So, okay, Marissa Gillette, thank you for joining us. And by the way, happy birthday. Is there anything in particular right now, because it is the legislative season, that you want our listeners? You said about this Energy and Technology Committee that there's something interesting going on. Is there anything in particular? We're in the middle of winter. Is there anything you want our listeners to know?
Yes. So the legislative process is just as important to be engaged in as the PURA dockets. So the Energy and Technology Committee, they're doing all of their public hearings by Zoom. You can sign up as a member of the public to comment on any of the bills that they put forward. Their first public comment hearing is this Thursday. And the piece of legislation I was just referencing, it's not on for this Thursday. They haven't announced a hearing date yet. But I would encourage people to contact their legislators or to sign up to give public comment at these hearings, because it's, in my opinion, it's just as important to engage there as it is at the PURA docket. So I hope folks find an opportunity to do one or both of those.
Marissa Gillette, thank you very much for joining us every month. We always look forward to having you on. I hope you're going to come in studio one of these Wednesdays. And happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to coming and seeing you in person very soon.
You bet. Happy birthday. Many, many more. Marissa Gillette of PURA. We'll be right back with Wayne Winston talking about race. Stay tuned.